Hello, and welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharakana. We invite you to join us on Thursdays at 8 p.m. for an engaging exchange with us and our special guest as we cover various topics regarding history, genealogy, and your personal family history stories. Hello, I'm Janice Gilliard.
And I'm Sharakana Feliciano. Welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharakana. Thank you for joining us. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Today, we are joined by our guest, Carice Reese Luck Brimmer.
Carice Luck Brimmer is currently a Community Initiatives Program Associate for Virginia Humanities, responsible for supporting the History United Advisory Council in Southern Virginia and the General Assembly African American Cultural Resources Task Force. Working primarily in the Dan River, Danville region, Carice collaborates with local community members to sustain a strong network of cultural organizations committed to positive change. Carice is a public historian and genealogist who has done extensive genealogical research on the Pennsylvania County area, specializing in community-based family history. She is the founding president of the Danville, Pennsylvania County chapter of the Afro-American Historical and Genealogical Society, OHGS. Carice is also a panelist on the genealogy web show, Black Progen Live. In 2019, she was appointed by Governor Northam to serve on the Virginia Board of Historic Resources. I'm excited and pleased to welcome to Speak On It, Carice Reese Luck Brimmer. Welcome.
Hello, hello.
Thanks for joining us. Looking forward to having this conversation with you. We'll just get started. As a public historian and genealogist, what was the catalyst for creating Our History Matters?
Well, the idea behind Our History Matters, it started with my late colleague, historian Emma Edmonds. And we were both working on a project called History United. That was a program under Virginia Humanities. And it was formed to share a more inclusive narrative here in the Dan River region, because you know, coming into the city, you would just get that one Civil War narrative. Right. So it was just important to, you know, share these stories, you know, just to, you know, just to share that inclusive story. So we were thinking of ways to expand once our contract was up. Mm-hmm. And since she was a Halifax County native, who also descended from the largest slaveholding family in Halifax County. I just got to put that in there.
Wow.
We had so much to share. So we knew that our contract was ending soon, and she rented out a space across from the Halifax County Courthouse because we just had so much. It was like so much information. It was just so much work left to do. And so she named this office History Matters. And it was short-lived because she eventually started to have health issues. So it was short-lived, and we ended up having to pack the office up. So that was the basis for the name and the concept. But I had always given tours to family reunion groups, community organizations. So I just decided to package everything that I do, including the genealogy, the historic preservation consulting, and the heir and probate research, all into Our History Matters.
That's awesome. And before we move on to the next question, Reese, can you give our listeners just a kind of geographical idea of where Dan River and the Danville region is located?
Danville is located on the North Carolina border. It is about 40 miles north of Greensboro, North Carolina, about an hour and 15 minutes outside the Raleigh-Durham Research Triangle Park. And it's actually so close to North Carolina that I heard that when William Byrd when he first, you know, came into this area and was surveying the land, that Danville was supposed to be in North Carolina, but somehow the maps were drawn wrong. So it ended up in Danville, Virginia. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Thank you for explaining that. And I've seen your website. It is amazing. Regarding your personal genealogy journey, when did you begin your research? And please share with us one or two ancestors who stand out the most to you or had a major impact on you.
Well, people that know me will say that I have been a genealogist all of my life, just unaware of what it actually was. And that's because one of my close girlfriends, as a child, my grandpa would always say, go up there and play with your cousin Crystal, you know. So I would always, you know, just tell everybody, you know, you're my cousin. You know, you're my cousin. My grandpa said you were my cousin. So, but I always credit my interest in genealogy to my grandfather, the late Reverend Befford Luck. He was the community historian. He knew everyone. He would greet everyone. He knew how everyone was related and connected. And he was my favorite person. So as a pastor, he was awesome at storytelling. And he would tell me the stories of my ancestors. And he was so entertaining. I would just be so just engrossed in what he was saying. You know, even as a young girl, you know, if he was never a bore to me, you know, where most kids, you know, young people, they wouldn't sit around their grandparents. You know, he was just so interesting. I would just listen. So I started collecting oral histories from people in the community where I grew up when I was 18. My mom, who was also a pastor, she was like the type, she wasn't like a historian per se, but she was one of those people in the community that always wanted to celebrate other people. So she was always giving like appreciation services at church for, you know, different people. And it's just some of those things that I picked up. Like I started doing the oral histories because I wanted to present it at church to the people that I had grew up with. You know, that was 20 some years ago. I'm still collecting those stories. So I still haven't given them that book. I'm still, you know, it's, I need to go ahead and finish. I actually collected one the other day, but it's just been like this lifelong project that I need to complete. But anyway, you know, that's how I really started. But the first ancestor that my grandfather told me about was Gardner Luck. He told me that Gardner Luck was so strong that he could knock the bark off of a tree with his bare fist. And that was one of those stories, you know, that, you know, it was just exciting, you know, and he would hold his, you know, arm up, you know, like to make the muscles and, you know, talk about that's where he got his strength from and, you know, all of these things. So over the years, I've pretty much followed Gardner Luck, connected all of his descendants and found out that the community I grew up in was in the same geographic location as the plantation. That Gardner Luck was on. So generations of my family since slavery grew up in this neighborhood, Camp Grove, that I grew up in. By the church that I'm speaking of is also named Camp Grove Baptist Church. The neighborhood got its name from the church. So the other ancestor that I heard about early on was Ella Farish Luck, my great-great-grandmother. And she was born just the year before emancipation in 1864. And she was actually the daughter of her family's enslaver's son. Oh. And, you know, this story was passed down through oral history. There are several of her grandchildren that are still living. They're all in their 90s, but they're living. They all verify these stories. And this is the one story that I have actually been able to follow through oral history. And I've been able to produce documents to back the oral history up.
That is the best.
That is amazing.
Yes, it is always the best, you know, when that happens, because you know, a lot of times, you know, you can never discount oral history, but for the most part, a lot of the stories, you know, we're banking on 85% of it being true. You know, but this is like, I mean, this story about her, everything was, you know, true. And so even down to the DNA evidence that connects me to this one man. So she was, you know, married to, there's this story where her mother dies young when she was 15, and she runs away from this home. And, you know, she, you know, this man, he just takes her home and marries her. She has almost 20 children by him. And her children, you know, she was very fair skinned, but they always said she had a dark set of kids and a light set. And so one of her children, I actually knew two of her children, but my great, great uncle Frank, who would have been my grandfather's uncle, he was really fair skinned, but my grandfather's father was dark skinned. So there's this story that my grandpa would tell me, and he would say, you know, grandmom, and I could just tell it bothered him, because he would tell this story. And then, like, I can remember my aunts and uncles sitting around laughing and was like, Dad, tell me that story about your racist grandma. Wow. But her, you know, darker skinned grandchildren, they were not allowed at her house. Oh. And so that was the story. And so my grandfather has this, a first cousin named Audrey, who I am very close to. She's 96 years old. And so, you know, she has affectionate, fond stories of her grandmother. They're so different from her darker skinned grandchildren. But it was just, wow. You know, that one story. You know, that he would share, and about how her father tried to give her land before he passed away, and her husband wouldn't let her take it. But she was interesting, you know, just that, because I always wondered, like, what was it about her? Like, what happened in her life that shaped the woman that she was? And like, why does she have such a disdain for her own descendants, you know, people that came from her? So it's something that still bothers me, because we all have this, you know, even, you know, and you all being genealogists, you know, you can contest to this, like, you just have these ancestors, and it's like, why? Why are they like that? What happened? Like, you know, so it's just those two, Gardner Luck, Ella Farish Luck, those are really the first two that I heard about and started my research on.
That's interesting. I've heard stories like that, and I actually have my own, where I had talked to my grandmother for years and she'd give me so much information, and then one day we were sitting on the porch and I said, now what else do you remember about Grandma Golda? And she said, well, she was color struck. I said, excuse me? And this was so different than anything else that she had said before. And she basically said she was fair-skinned and did not want any of her children to marry darker complected people. And I just thought, but you never told me that before. And she said, well, you never asked me. And I was like, I was stunned by that. But I think a lot of it had to do with shame that wasn't really theirs to bear. I think it also dealt with, you know, fair skinned people were treated better. You know, so it's like I don't know, it's psychology. It's like there's so much to what we have gone through as a people, and how it plays out in our lives and our relationships, especially when we go back and we look at that in history, that, you know, a lot of our families, they dealt with that, or they had those views, and it was just like, wow. And I had a cousin say the same thing. Everybody was praising this one grandmother. This is on a different line. And she said, yeah, well, but she didn't want any of her dark skinned children to come to her home. And I thought, how sad is that? But again, that was their experience. It doesn't make it right, but it was something internally in them that, and it was negative that came out, you know, and how many people do we deal with today that are still doing the same thing?
Right. You
know? So that's just something that has to be changed in a discussion that needs to be had, but it's sad that it did happen.
Yeah. You know, when doing family genealogy and unpacking all of this stuff, it comes with certain elements. Sometimes it's exciting and great information, and sometimes it's disappointing and it's, you know, it's sad, you know, but it just comes with the territory of it.
And then we have a responsibility to celebrate everybody. You know, when we do our family reunions, I embrace and celebrate everybody to say, hey, exactly. Whatever happened in the past, happened in the past. Let's exactly. correct it and move forward, embrace one another.
Learning from it, exactly. and doing better. So historically, Danville, Virginia is an important part of the civil rights movement. Can you please share with our listeners why?
Well, Danville is significant to the civil rights movement because pretty much everything that happened here tied into the national narrative. And some of our, well, whatever was going on in the 60s, we all know at the height of Jim Crow, pretty much. Mm-hmm. But some of our local attorneys were a part of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, and they were a part of many historic cases like Brown versus Board of Education, the Martinsville Seven, and they would work with these famed civil rights lawyers like Oliver Hill, Spotswood Robinson, Thurgood Marshall before the Supreme Court Justice. Mm-hmm. They were just, you know, these are, when you think of the Brown versus Board of Education, I mean, this is like one of those key historic civil rights cases.
Yep.
A lot of the meetings would take place here at the Williams House, which is now the home of the NAACP. The first three African Americans to attend UVA's law school were from Danville. One of them, namely Robert Williams, he was also a part of a group of student protesters that at the age of 16 led a sit-in at the all-white library that led to integration. And this would happen 2 months. This happened in April of 1960. So this happened 2 months after the Greensboro Four. The famed sit-ins at the Woolworth counter in Greensboro. So that really inspired like people all over. So Danville was no different. So 2 months later, they led that sit-in. The thing about the library is that it was the Sutherland Mansion, AKA the last capital of the Confederacy, where Jefferson Davis last held his cabinet. And so, you know, in telling that story, it's one of those things that kind of counteracts that Civil War narrative. Like, okay, this is the Sutherland Mansion. This is what happened here, but this house, you know, it also tells a different story of what happened in 1960, you know, with the sit-ins. And then we have 1963, that local SCLC affiliates, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, their local affiliates, the Danville Christian Progressive Association that was formed by local ministers, they were indicted and, you know, for protesting and for sit-ins. And this led to what we call here is Bloody Monday. And Bloody Monday, you know, this becomes a national story, goes all over the world. And it's just, you hear about the Bloody Sunday and all of those things that took place in Alabama and Mississippi. But Danville was a big part of the narrative here. I mean, even John Lewis, in his book, he mentions Danville and says that Danville was a big part of the civil rights narrative that is just left out. Dr. King came to Danville 4 times in 63 and is quoted several times with saying that Danville had one of the most brutal police forces that he had ever seen.
Oh.
So now the Sutherland Mansion, it's owned by the city and it's now the Danville Museum of Fine Arts and History. And on February 1st, this past February, the museum went on the National Civil Rights Trail for what happened there in 1960. And it's only one of three sites in Virginia. So that kind of puts Danville on the maps, kind of solidifies, you know, Danville's place in civil rights history. That's like just this a big thing, you know, to be on the United States Civil Rights Trail. So it's bringing, you know, a lot of people to the city. A lot of people want to know, you know, about the things that happened here. I, you know, think about the tours that that I'm giving. And at the time when I started them, I had no clue. I was just sharing these stories. You know, I knew that they, you know, were worth telling. But now it's just, it, you know, this designation is actually bringing people to the city. So more and more people are coming here and like, what's here? I want to take your tour. So.
And that's one of the reasons why Speak On It deals with, we talk about history, we talk about genealogy, we talk about, hey, what history is in your own backyard?
Right.
I don't know if anybody saw the PBS special last night on Fannie Lou Hamer, but it was so powerful. And I mean, I knew a lot about her, but it focused specifically on her life, just more in depth, not her included with so many other people. And it was phenomenal. And I was fired up like, hey, our history is so important. And mm-hmm. we still have work to do. And yeah. Just looking at her, viewing her last night, viewing that program, I was like, wow. Reese, you offer tours for the Dan River region of Virginia. What are some of the historic sites included in this area of Virginia?
Well, out of the 22, let me back up. I provide cultural heritage tours. So my focus is pretty much on, you know, Black and brown communities, African-American history. And so in Danville, we have 22 historic markers, but only 8 markers represent African-American history. And so I have a marker tour that I do, but I also try to go by at least a couple of markers on all of my tours. But some of the sites that I stop at is the Black Business District. Mm-hmm. We have a Black Business District here that was pretty much formed in the early 1900s. It used to be the Tobacco Warehouse District. And once the tobacco warehouses, you know, by the late 1800s, they were like moving out into the rural areas, into the factories and things like that. So they started to disappear. And so it was, you know, the warehouses were located in Lower Main Street. So it was like, okay, we have a spot for you. You can't be on the main thoroughfare on Main Street, but you can go down to Union Bottom, which we refer to as the Black Business Mecca. And so I just, you know, go through there and I talk about the businesses that lined North Union Street and, you know, just some of the history of the people. I also provide a little genealogy on my tour, especially if it's somebody on the tour that I've done, you know, research for their family. So that always pulls them in, especially tying them to, you know, people who have made significant changes, you know, in Danville. I also go by the historic High Street Baptist Church, which is also on the National Register of Historic Places. And it is the first church, the first Black church in the city, which started in the First Baptist Church. And after emancipation, they got tired of worshiping in the balcony. And so they formed their own church. And also the Hallbrook Ross District, which is the African American district. This is the only neighborhood that was actually formed for African American, you know, professionals and doctors and dentists and professionals. So I, you know, go through that neighborhood and just talk about all of the significant things through that neighborhood. There's at least, there were several Green Book listings, but there's 3 that's still standing. So I'll mm-hmm. talk about the significance of the Green Book and just point out, you know, different places like the first African-American funeral home is on that street. And, you know, places where the Negro Leagues would stay when they would come in town. So it's so many things to share. So those are just a couple of stops that I made.
That's really awesome. And speaking of markers, first of all, I like what you said about how you bring it to genealogy, where you try to tie it into someone's genealogy. I think that is a very powerful tool. I think it's a very almost like it's a spiritual thing. It's kind of a magical thing, however way you want to put it. But like when you're able to tie people to the land, it just puts it in a different perspective and really brings it to life for people. So that's really, really awesome. And so speaking of markers, on your website, you note that less than 2% of state historical markers represent African-American history and culture. What can and should be done to change this?
Get with your local historical societies. You know, it takes a people. It takes, you know, just, you know, people who are dedicated to preserving this history, you know, to get with their local historical societies, research, seek out these lesser known stories that will help frame, you know, just an inclusive narrative. And start working with the Department of Historic Resources on your application process. Think about the stories that have statewide significance that haven't been told. Find sponsors to help pay for the manufacture of these markers. In the state of Virginia, the markers can cost an upward of $1,900. So go to your city officials, the local government, see who has funding. There are plenty of community organizations that are in your city that would love to donate. You know, these markers, they bring people to your city. They bring money,
right.
All of these things. So these sites are important. To telling the full American story. So it just takes community-minded citizens to get out there and say, okay, we want a marker on this. You know, this story deserves to be told. And just connecting with those people, like I said, the historical societies, your state and local leaders, and just see how you can get together and do this. And even if you don't know, you may just know something brief about a story. You know, seek out your local historians, people that can help you flesh out the story and help you along with your application process.
Absolutely. There's in South Carolina, there's one dedicated to a church that my, I want to say, fourth great grandfather established. So it can be done. And then within our genealogy group, our local Ox chapter, we worked with a member, one of our members, and providing a letter of support to get it done for her church. And they just celebrated, I believe, 100 years last year. So Reese, why is knowing your local history so important?
It's, you know, just the whole preserving local history, just sharing the stories of the people that framed your surroundings. These stories, they bring about a sense of pride in our communities. Like,
right.
We always look at history on this big macro level,
right.
You know, but I don't care how small your town is, even if you have a town of 2,000 people, everywhere has a history. And, you know, local history is one of the, it highlights people that you possibly knew. People who shaped the neighborhoods where we grew up. You know, these things tie heavily into genealogy also. I always have to throw genealogy into everything, you know, but it does. And that's how a lot of these local, these stories, these lesser known stories that I know is because of genealogy.
Right.
By adding, how do we say it? Adding bones to the skeletons on our ancestors,
adding meat to the bones,
So, you know, doing that, we come across all of these fascinating stories, you know, so, you know, we pass by historical sites all day. We have no idea of the stories behind them, you know, and the history behind these places, they change the way they can change the way we think about the present. These places, you know, we can provide context to these places that will help people understand, bring about a greater understanding of how we got to where we are. So in local history, it's also crucial to historic preservation. of the cities we live in. Right. They also can serve as a tool for economic development, like old historic buildings, you know, reimagining these spaces. Like, you know, we have a housing shortage. Like, this is a national problem. We have a housing shortage. And just think about these old warehouses and things that might have historic value that we can use to, you know, turn into lofts, apartments, all of these things to address the housing shortage. So I always tell people, you know, historic preservation, it is economic development. You know, more and more places are, you know, starting to take notice. But, you know, these are some of the things, these are some of the reasons why local history is important.
I'm so glad, Janet, that you asked that question. And, you know, it's, and I like the fact that you brought up the point, Reese, about the macro level, like, you know, every Black History Month, and Black History Month is very important. And we learn a lot of great stuff every Black History Month, every February. But a lot of it is very macro level. And, you know, bringing it to a more local level is important, because we end up ignoring so much of the things that have happened in our own backyards. And, you know, we are, it's awesome to learn about our greats and our firsts and our this and our that, you know, those people, you know, deserve their place. But it's also, you know, equally important to understand about the place that you're in and the feet, you know, the ground that your feet touch, and the history that's there, that, you know, unfortunately, I feel is often, you know, overlooked. So it's a great question, and, you know, we see great points, you know, made. So you have presented for our OGS in Jersey chapter, and the information you shared was really powerful regarding your personal genealogy journey and Virginia history. What motivates you to continue making a difference with the historical work that you do and genealogy?
I'm always motivated by people who take my tours, who are enlightened, and they're so full after they take the tour because of the stories that they never knew about, that happened in the place that they grew up in, that may even tie into an ancestor, you know, of theirs. So they feel like, wow, you know, my ancestor, you know, they contributed to building, you know, this city. So I also believe, you know, that everyone deserves to know their family history and where they came from. And as a historian, a genealogist, I feel that I have a personal mandate, so to speak, to inform people and to just educate them, to make sure the stories are being told. And I'm motivated by like, you know, it's just this pull. You all can speak to that. Like, it's just something inside of you. That, you know, like, you have this knowledge, but you just want everybody to know. Like, you want everybody to know their ancestors and their history. So I feel like it changes the way people feel about themselves. It can be a life changer. Genealogy has changed my life, my entire life, even down to, I mean, it's a part of my whole life, but even down to like my career goals, and it all ties into everything that I'm doing professionally. So, I'm just motivated and inspired by it all.
Your response had me write three notes. And one is, and I try to quote this whenever my heart is just tugged on, it reminds me, Kanika Marshall, or Kathy Marshall, she says, genealogy research is not a goal, but a mandate, which you said. And then me personally, my mantra has been, we all have a responsibility, at least somebody in your family, to research, document, and share. And then when you said it's changed your life, I totally, totally agree with that. And so we had one of our guests, her name is Cheryl Wills. And she said, when you do this work, you will be blessed. When you speak on behalf of your ancestors, when you research, you know, what they went through, how, and I keep saying this over and over again, how resilient they were, the fact that they survived, and then we are here is so important. And I can't stress that enough. And then that part about being blessed, In me researching and my research and connecting with other descendants, I have been blessed.
Yes.
And it does change your life. So thank you for saying that, because it really, if you're really into it and you just, that spiritual connection takes place, and even feeling like, to me, I honestly, you know, like the, you see a quote every now and then, it says, walk like you have 3,000 ancestors behind you. To me, I feel like I have millions behind me. And I literally can feel like spiritually, keep doing what you're doing. There's more to uncover. Don't stop. Keep going. And then inspire and encourage other people. I recently did a presentation for an organization out in California, and it was for the children. And I was like, okay, this is going to be a little bit different. And only boys were there from ages 7 to 12. And to hear them talk about taking their DNA test, to share their family history, what they discovered in their research, it totally blew me away. And then the charts that they had, I said, oh, well, what program did you use to prepare your charts? And they said, oh, we didn't use a program. We just create, they created everything on their own. And it was mind-blowing. And so somebody said to me, they said, did you capture it? Did you record it? And I said, it wasn't my session. I was not in charge, but it should have been recorded, because to see young Black males having done their research and then sharing, and one kid just blew me away when he said, may I share my screen now? Because it was via Zoom. It was so powerful. And that moment for me, out of all the presentations that I've done, to hear from the children, these young boys, totally, that changed my life. And I told him, I said, you all are so special. You have no idea. And I said, I would give anything to have started at the age that you're starting at, 7 to 12 years old. It was phenomenal. So with that, Reese, please share with our listeners your parting words of inspiration. I'm sure that they would love to hear that from you. Your words of inspiration to them as far as research.
Well, just keep going. Just keep going. I had years ago, 2015, and I was at the OGS conference in Richmond. And so Douglas Wilder was there. They were sharing, former governor, they were sharing his history. And, you know, I wanted to meet him, and I, you know, got the book, had him sign the book. And, you know, we took a picture, and I'm talking to him, and I'm telling him about all of my plans. You know, all of the things that, you know, I'm now doing, things that I was dreaming about then. And I was just asking him for advice. And he was like, look, let me tell you something. You don't need an army to do anything. And that is like the one thing that's like stuck with me, because a lot of times we get discouraged because we feel like others aren't supporting in the way that, you know, we feel like they should.
Right.
And there's so many things that, you know, come along that discourage us along the way, but you just have to keep going and be consistent in what you're doing, you know. And you know the things that you've prayed about, and you know the things that you've envisioned for yourself. You know what God put in you. So just use your gifts. Your gifts will make room.
Preach.
My gifts, you know, have been making room. Like Miss Janice says, genealogy has truly blessed me. You know, and the blessings, I don't take it lightly, because I feel like these are the blessings that I've inherited from my ancestors. You know, all of the things that my ancestors have went through to get me through this point. And I feel like I'm just, you know, I'm just living out, you know, my ancestors' dreams, and just telling their stories. Telling their stories has blessed me, you know, has led me to a career. You know, to where I'm able to, you know, make money,
right,
you know, to take care of myself. You know, all of these things, you know, I consider blessings, and, you know, I couldn't do none of this without genealogy. So, I just want everybody to be, you know, inspired, even with, you know, your research. Don't get discouraged. You know, sometimes it helps to have a research buddy. People that can look at, you know, sometimes it helps to have two set of eyes. You know, these are people come to me all the time, like, Reese, you know, I'm just giving up. I can't find this. And, you know, so, you know, just stay consistent, just stay at it. Just keep going, you know, and don't stop, and, you know why you started.
Right. Right. Oh man, you've said some really amazing, great quotes there. And your gifts will make room. That really like jumped out at me. I love that. Reese, thank you so much for sharing with us and our listeners.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, we're really, really glad to have you this evening. And for additional information regarding Our History Matters, please visit www.ourhistorymatters434.com. We thank you for joining us, and we look forward to sharing with you during our next segment of Speak On It.
Speak On It is a podcast and is immediately available to listen to at your leisure. We are forever thankful to Bernice Bennett, who hosted research at the National Archives and beyond, for entrusting us to continue her broadcast legacy through Speak On It. Thank you.